Interspersed with this direct account of what had happened to the expedition were more personal observations, most of which I am reluctant to summarize here, except there is one passage that pertains to Area X and to our relationship, too. Seeing all of this, experiencing all of it, even when it's bad, I wish you were here. I wish we had volunteered together. I would have understood you better here. On the trek north, we wouldn't have needed to say anything if you didn't want to. It wouldn't have bothered me, not at all. And we wouldn't have turned back. We would have kept going until we couldn't go farther. Slowly, painfully, I realized what I had been reading from the very first words of his journal. My husband had had an inner life that went beyond his gregarious exterior, and if I had known enough to let him inside my guard, I might have understood this fact, except I hadn't, of course. I had let tidal pools and fungi that could devour plastic inside my guard, but not him. Of all the aspects of the journal, this ate at me the most. He had created his share of our problems by pushing me too hard, by wanting too much, by trying to see something in me that didn't exist. But I could have met him part way and retained my sovereignty, and now it was too late. His personal observations included many grace notes, a description in the margin of a tidal pool in the rocks down the coast just beyond the lighthouse, a lengthy observation of the atypical use of an outcropping of oysters at low tide by a skimmer seeking to kill a large fish. Photographs of the tidal pool had been stuck in a sleeve in the back. Placed carefully in the sleeve, too, were pressed wildflowers, a slender seed pod, a few unusual leaves. My husband would have cared little for any of this. Even the focus to observe the skimmer and write a page of notes would have required great concentration from him. I knew these elements were intended for me and me alone. There were no endearments, but I understood in part because of this restraint. He knew how much I hated words like love. The last entry, written upon his return to the lighthouse, read, "I'm going back up the coast, but not on foot." There was a boat in the ruined village, staved in, rotting, but I have enough wood from the wall outside the lighthouse to fix it. I'll follow the shoreline as far as I can go, to the island, or perhaps beyond. If you ever read this, that is where I am going. That is where I will be. Could there be, even within all of these transitional ecosystems, one still more transitional, at the limits of the tower's influence but not yet under the border's influence? After reading the journal, I was left with the comfort of that essential recurring image of my husband putting out to sea in a boat he had rebuilt, out through the crashing surf to the calm just beyond, of him following the coastline north, alone, seeking in that experience the joy of small moments remembered from happier days. It made me fiercely proud of him. It showed resolve. It showed bravery. It bound him to me in a more intimate way than we had ever seemed to have while together. In glimmers, in shreds of thought, in the aftermath of my reading, I wondered if he kept a journal still, or if the dolphin's eye had been familiar for a reason other than that it was so human. But soon enough I banished this nonsense. Some questions will ruin you if you are denied the answer long enough. My injuries had receded into a constant but manageable ache when I breathed. Not coincidentally, by nightfall, the brightness was thrushing up through my lungs and into my throat again, so that I imagined wisps of it misting from my mouth. I shuddered at the thought of the psychologist's plume, seen from afar, like a distress signal. I couldn't wait for morning. Even if this was just a premonition of a far distant future, I would return to the tower now. It was the only place for me to go. I left behind the assault rifle and all but one gun. I left my knife. I left my knapsack, affixed a water canteen to my belt. I took my camera, but then thought better of it and abandoned it by a rock halfway to the tower. It would just distract, this impulse to record, and photographs mattered no more than samples. I had decades of journals waiting for me in the lighthouse. I had generations of expeditions that had ghosted on ahead of me. The pointlessness of that, the pressure of that, almost got to me again. The waste of it all. I had brought a flashlight, but found I could see well enough by the green glow that emanated from my own body. I crept quickly through the dark along the path leading to the tower. The black sky, free of clouds, framed by the tall, narrow lines formed by pine trees, reflected the full immensity of the heavens. No borders, no artificial light to obscure the thousands of glinting pinpricks. I could see everything. As a child, I had stared up at the night sky and searched for shooting stars like everyone else. As an adult, sitting on the roof of my cottage near the bay, and later haunting the empty lot, I looked not for shooting stars, but for fixed ones, and I would try to imagine what kind of life lived in those celestial tidal pools so far from us. The stars I saw now looked strange, strewn across the dark in chaotic new patterns, where just the night before I had taken comfort in their familiarity. Was I only now seeing them clearly? Was I perhaps even farther from home than I had thought? There shouldn't have been a grim sort of satisfaction in the thought. The heartbeat came to me more distinctly as I entered the tower, my mask tied tightly in place over my nose and mouth. I did not know if I was keeping further contamination out or just trying to contain my brightness. The bioluminescence of the words on the wall had intensified, and the glow from my exposed skin seemed to respond in kind, lighting my way. Otherwise, I sensed no difference as I descended past the first levels. If these upper reaches had become familiar, that feeling was balanced by the sobering fact that this was my first time alone in the tower. With each new curve of those walls down into further darkness, dispelled only by the grainy green light, I came more and more to expect something to erupt out of the shadows to attack me. I missed the surveyor in those moments and had to tamp down my guilt, and despite my concentration, I found I was drawn to the words on the wall, that even as I tried to concentrate on the greater depths, those words kept bringing me back. There shall be in the planting in the shadows a grace and a mercy that shall bloom dark flowers, and their teeth shall devour and sustain and herald the passing of an age. Sooner than expected, I came to the place where we had found the anthropologist dead. Somehow it surprised me that she still lay there, surrounded by the debris of her passage, scraps of cloth, her empty knapsack, a couple of broken vials, her head forming a broken outline. She was covered with a moving carpet of pale organisms that, as I stooped close, I discovered were the tiny hand-shaped parasites that lived among the words on the wall. It was impossible to tell if they were protecting her, changing her, or breaking her body down, just as I could not know whether some version of the anthropologist had indeed appeared to the surveyor near base camp after I had left for the lighthouse. I did not linger, but continued farther down. Now the tower's heartbeat began to echo and become louder. Now the words on the wall once again became fresher, as if only just dried after creation. I became aware of a hum under the heartbeat, almost a staticky buzzing sound. The brittle mustiness of that space ceded to something more tropical and cloying. I found that I was sweating. Most important, the track of the crawler beneath my boots became fresher, stickier, and I tried to favor the right-hand wall to avoid the substance. That right-hand wall had changed, too, in that a thin layer of moss or lichen covered it. I did not like having to press my back up against it to avoid the substance on the floor, but I had no choice. After about 2 hours of slowed progress, the heartbeat of the tower had risen to a point where it seemed to shake the stairs, and the underlying hum splintered into a fresh crackling. My ears rang with it, my body vibrated with it, and I was sweating through my clothes due to the humidity, the stuffiness almost making me want to take off my mask in an attempt to gulp down air. But I resisted the temptation. I was close. I knew I was close. To what? I had no idea. The words on the wall here were so freshly formed that they appeared to drip, and the hand-shaped creatures were less numerous, and those that did manifest formed closed fists, as if not yet quite awake and alive. That which dies shall still know life in death, for all that decays is not forgotten, and reanimated shall walk the world in a bliss of not knowing. I spiraled around one more set of stairs, and then, as I came into the narrow straightaway before the next curve, I saw light, the edges of a sharp golden light that emanated from a place beyond my vision, hidden by the wall, and the brightness within me throbbed and thrilled to it. The buzzing sound again intensified until it was so jagged and hissing that I felt as if blood might trickle from my ears. The heartbeat over top boomed into every part of me. I did not feel as if I were a person, but simply a receiving station for a series of overwhelming transmissions. I could feel the brightness spewing from my mouth in a half-invisible spray, meeting the resistance of the mask, and I tore it off with a gasp. "Give back to that which gave to you," came the thought, not knowing what I might be feeding, or what it meant for the collection of cells and thoughts that comprised me. You understand, I could no more have turned back than have gone back in time. My free will was compromised, if only by the severe temptation of the unknown. To have quit that place, to have returned to the surface without rounding that corner, my imagination would have tormented me forever. In that moment, I had convinced myself I would rather die knowing something, anything. I passed the threshold. I descended into the light. One night during the last months at Rock Bay, I found myself intensely restless. This was after I had confirmed that my grant wouldn't be renewed, and before I had any prospects of a new job. I had brought another stranger I knew back from the bar to try to distract myself from my situation, but he had left hours ago. I had a wakefulness that I could not shake, and I was still drunk. It was stupid and dangerous, but I decided to get in my truck and drive out to the tidal pools. I wanted to creep up on all of that hidden life and try to surprise it somehow. I had gotten it into my mind that the tidal pools changed during the night when no one watched. This is what happens, perhaps, if you have been studying something so long that you can tell one sea anemone from another in an instant, could have picked out any denizen of those tidal pools from a lineup if it had committed a crime. So I parked the truck, took the winding trail down to the grainy beach, making my way with the aid of a tiny flashlight attached to my keychain. Then I sloshed through the shallows and climbed up onto the sheet of rock. I really wanted to lose myself. People my entire life have told me I am too much in control, but that has never been the case. I have never truly been in control, have never wanted control. That night, even though I had come up with 1,000 excuses to blame others, I knew I had screwed up. Not filing reports, not sticking to the focus of the job, recording odd data from the periphery, nothing that might satisfy the organization that had provided the grant. I was the queen of the tidal pools, and what I said was a law,